Blog Talk Radio.
Natural Skincare by Karima with Shea Butter. We offer a great selection of 100% all-natural moisturizing creams for the face and body, without preservatives. Also, check out our hair products. Order online and get them delivered to your home. Check out our new online shop at www.etsy.com. Search for Natural Skincare by KHB. For more information, visit us online at www.naturalskincarebykarima.com or email us at naturalskincarebykarima@gmail.com. Give us a call at 301-534-4475 or fax us at 240-318-3537. Try out our newest product, our Peppermint Foot Rub, for a luxurious feeling your feet won't forget. Bineman Associates Financial Planning and Insurance. Immediate annuities. Retirees, roll over your 401ks, TSPs, and pension plans into an immediate annuity. It will pay you a monthly income for life guaranteed. Please contact me for a free income quote today. At Bineman Associates, we'll professionally mind your business. Visit us online at www.BinemanAssociatesInsurance.com or give us a call at 202-288-5660 or 301-234-9090. Natural Skincare by Karima with Shea Butter. We offer a great selection of 100% all-natural moisturizing creams for the face and body, without preservatives. Also, check out our hair products. Order online and get them delivered to your home. Check out our new online shop at www.etsy.com. Search for Natural Skincare by KHB. For more information, visit us online at www.naturalskincarebykarima.com or email us at naturalskincarebykarima@gmail.com. Give us a call at 301-534-4475 or fax us at 240-318-3537. Try out our newest product, our Peppermint Foot Rub, for a luxurious feeling your feet won't forget.
And again, welcome back to the New Africa Business Association of Money. I'm your host, Bilal Masleek Bynum. I think I have my co-host on there with me, Brother Aziz.
Yes, Abdul Aziz Shaheed. Greetings to our audience, and assalamualaikum to you, Brother Bilal.
Yes, yes, we're getting the feedback because we lost our direct connect. I think I don't know if the weather somewhere is affecting us. But anyway, we are on... with our telephone connection, so I need to make some distance away from the station so I don't get the feedback. But anyway, welcome again to one of our shows. We're going to continue with our disaster preparation, preparing for natural disasters. And Brother Aziz, I mean, we've been talking about this now for a while, but you can see the importance of training when it comes to natural disasters. And our being able to work with our training, and eventually we'll have many representatives that can work with FEMA and help those who need help, and we know they need help when it comes to natural disasters. So we will continue with our programs on natural disasters And we will be bringing on Sister Aisha. We'll give the audience a chance to sort of call in and prepare to get some very informative, in some cases, life-saving information. Because you can see how catastrophic these storms are, the catastrophics that they're having. And this is just the beginning of the season, Brother Aziz.
Yes, indeed,
just the beginning. But before we get started, and I'm going to turn it over for your comments, I want to inform the audience, let them know something about New Africa Business Association and Black Belt Wall Street. Of course, yeah. New Africa Business Association was incorporated in 2005 by our late leader, Imam W.D. Muhammad, which changed the name of the Muslims National Business Associations, and he changed that name, those names to New Africa Business Association in 2005. And since 2005 up to today's date, there are many New Africa Business Associations throughout the country. And these New Africa Business Associations, of course, in their own communities, they network market and they identify businesses that are in their communities and with the intent of doing business with each other. But the first thing was recognizing who is in business that is an African-American that they could do business with. So again, that was there are many, many New Africa Business Associations in existence from that incorporation in 2005. Now, Black Belt Wall Street is a very, very, very old. Matter of fact, yeah. The origins of the Black Belt started with the beginning of slavery, and it was called the Black Soil in its origins. And the Black Soil ranged from Texas throughout the South, ending in Virginia, but you have to include Maryland and Delaware, because they were a part of that big slave concentration, and where most of the slaves was concentrated in when they brought us here to this country. We were spread out, again, from Texas throughout the South to include Maryland and Virginia, Maryland and Delaware, because that's who owned the slaves, and that's where the black soil and the production from that black soil came from. And that production from that black soil, we know, created many, many different products that made the United States the richest country in the entire world because of the black soil and the slaves that was productive from that black soil. So after slavery, Booker T. Washington, when he put together his business plan, when after the Greenwood business district out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, called them in, and they was fully developed at that time from that rich oil that they owned. And that rich oil not only produced more than 100 of the most successful businesses in this country, and that was known as the Greenwood Business District out of Tulsa, over 100 square blocks of banks, you name it, they were banks, insurance companies, brokerage, financial brokerage houses, real estate brokers, lawyers, engineers, teachers, and they had their own schools and what have you. So they was they actually set the example of what it was to be wealthy, and it was that wealth and that sustain in themselves and the wealth that that enabled them to expand, and that expansion, they needed a business-minded person. Therefore, they called in Booker T. Washington, and they flew him into Oklahoma, and of course they had their own airplanes, their own airports, and they flew Booker T. Washington. They flew over the entire Black Belt, again ranging from Texas to New York, and they started, of course, the business plan that Booker T. Washington, along with the Greenwood business districts, put together. And those business plans included expanding the banks and the insurance companies and the brokerage that they already had in Tulsa. They started putting these business entities in many, many different states and parts of the South, as to where now Black folks had banks and financial institutions that they could go to, and this is what enabled them to be able to pay off many of the sharecroppers and other agreements that they were tied up into, that they found that they could never get out because that debt would just get larger at the end of the year. At the sharecroppers, your debt is $5,000, but of course the slave owners would put surcharges of another $2,000, and you had to go back year after year, and you never could find yourself paying off the debt. But because now we had our own banks, financial institutions, and all of the wealth that was coming from that sea of oil, that it would made the Greenwood Business District very rich and famous, now was spreading throughout what was known now as the Black Belt Business District that had been started. And that Black Belt Business District and the business communities, the black business communities, started growing again all the way from Texas all the way to New York. And you had business flow, or the circulation of the black dollar was now circulating in all of our black communities. And statistics tells us that during this time, the black dollar stayed in the black communities for at least 40 times of circulating in all of our communities before it would have to go on the outside of the communities continue its money growth circulation. But it stayed in our communities, in all of our communities. As a matter of fact, it was during this time where the African American communities, during the time of segregation, that was some of our richest times, really, in our history. Not today's time, but during the time of really segregation, during the circulation and the power of the businesses that was being generated throughout the South, and that was coming from the financial powers of the Greenwood Business District. And of course, the Black Belt Business District continued to grow, and at some point, there was many Black Belt Business Districts throughout the South, but the most famous one of all was the one that the Black Belt Business District named, and that name was given Black Belt Wall Street because of its popularity of all of the business districts throughout the South that had been built by the Black Belt Business District and financed by the Greenwood Business Community of Tulsa. And of course, that's where that popular name, Black Belt Wall Street, came from, of Booker T. Washington and all of the business advisors that made up the Black Belt Business District. And of course, that is also the very reasons that the disruption of the Greenwood Business District was done, because again, it was from the Greenwood Business District, or what is famously known now as Black Belt Wall Street, that white folks found where they thought they were becoming inferior to us because of how powerful and the way we, our independence and the rich way we lived our independence. Again, it was even reported that we bought on our own destruction by not showing inferiority to white folks at that time. And this is a case that was blamed on us by the state and federal government, said that, you know, we should have been much more inferior to white folks. And, you know, this is in the history. But no, because of our financial independence, we set an example that of the highest esteem that any human beings could possibly set during the business growth throughout the South. And, of course, we know that the Greenwood Business District was already, they was already heavily independent, and most of the citizens who lived in that Greenwood Business District was most of them were rich, or they had a good financial independence. And so again, this is a reasons for that attack on that Green, because again, you know, if you cut off the head of the cash flow, then they thinking that that would put a stop to the advancement of African Americans throughout the South, and that that great migration that was taking place at the same time, where African Americans, now that they could pay off their debts, they were actually leaving the South, and they was buying that old Model T Ford. Back in those days, Henry Ford had just made the Model T, and African Americans was buying that old Model T Ford, especially when it became the used car business. And my goodness, well, you can see pictures of what those old Model Ts, how they were stacked up with all kinds of baggages and luggages and South. They were leaving by the convoys because, again, they couldn't make any money in the South. So, therefore, that's why that migration and moving to the North and most of those northern cities. Of course, you starting around the Illinois and the Ohio's and right on to, I'm saying as far as going west. And, of course, the Black Belt business districts also went in those directions. So a lot of money went into Chicago from the Black Belt business districts. A lot of money's went into Detroit's and Ohio's. And, of course, right on New York and throughout the South. And even after the destruction of the of Tulsa, of Black Wall Street, that did not stop a Black Belt business district. Are now after that destruction, the Black Belt business district called the entire Black Belt business district, which now is called Black Belt Wall Street, and the Black Belt Wall Street. Powerful institutions came from it, starting with a business such as Marcus Garvey. This is how he got his start. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the great movement with the Black Muslim movement that started in this country and started the Muslim religions in this country. Again, all of that started by being financed by the Black Belt Wall Street. Malcolm X, the Nation of Islam, many the Honorable Martin Luther King, Reverend Martin Luther King, many of them, many churches, all of them got, because at that time we owned our own banks, financial institutions, insurance companies. These companies were spread throughout many states. You still know some of them today, North Carolina Mutual, but there was many other insurance companies, and all of them got started from the Black Belt business district of Black Belt Wall Street. So Black Belt Wall Street, Tulsa, Oklahoma, was, we know our brothers and sisters, and was murdered. We don't know the numbers. We know the numbers are quite high. And that murder took place because of we didn't show inferiority to white folks the way white folks expect for us to. So, but again, not only, that's one of the reasons they say that attack went down, but we know the big picture, the reason that attack took place is the financial power that those oil fields that we own and the monies from those oil fields was generating, not only to build the Greenwood Business District, but also the entire Black Wall Street or the entire Black Belt Wall Street districts. And again, those areas ran, or those districts ran from Texas all the way throughout the South to include Maryland and Delaware. So that's a some of the history that I guess that's a summary, I say, of Black Belt Wall Street and our intentions. And of course, we know that Black Belt Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma, not only was that city or our businesses there were taken and our citizens and our brothers and sisters were murdered, but that oil that belongs to us and also to the Native Americans, white folks took all of that. You go there today, you'll see the great big oil refineries that is holding. But back in those days, it was just an ocean of oil. Just a huge ocean of oil. And that ocean of oil is flowing today. But again, white supremacists own it. They so-called own it, because when you steal something, it's not really yours. But for a time, they do have the ownership of it. And that did not stop the growth of Black Belt Wall Street when they did that disruption. Black Belt Wall Street and our business associations continued to grow. Our business associations with the Black Belt, white supremacists did not destroy that, nor was they able to put a take the name of the Black Belt Wall Street, because it was just too many states involved. But the Tulsa, Oklahoma, not only did they take businesses and all, and like I said, that ocean of oil that they're making trillions off of today, and our people, they just killed them, and of course, nothing comes our way anymore. But they also put a patent on the name Black Wall Street, hoping that we would stay dead. And in most cases, I know what I am speaking of: Black Wall Street of Tulsa, the Greenwood Business District, and Black Belt Wall Street. Many of us have forgotten that history, or it was just the history that we that white supremacists wanted to just simply die along with those that they murdered. But it would never die. And we as here that have incorporated and bought back the name Black Belt Wall Street, we want to go back to that. We want to create that. That's why the New Africa Business Association and Black Belt Wall Street LLC has been created. And from that creation, we're looking to network market and identify African-American businesses all the way from Texas to Maine, and identify African-American businesses, and so we can network with each other, get to know each other as business owners, and through networking, we can, and networking, and one of the ways we network with is what we're doing on the radio right now. When we open these mics up here in a period of time, we will be networking, talking with each other, letting each other know about our businesses. And sometimes on our radio shows, we have open mics. And on those nights, we ask all business listeners to come on and take 2 or 3 minutes and identify your business, give your websites and your telephone numbers and what have you, so we can get to know each other, network with each other, and come and become each other's clients. And see, this is something, brothers and sisters, when we talk about start business associations in your own communities. And this is what that's why we want you to become members of Black Belt Wall Street. Fitness Association in your own state, in your own communities, and set up network marketing and business identification, have business meetings in your communities. But the biggest thing is that we need to start becoming economically involved. We need to become economically doers, owners, buyers, and being in business. We need to become very proactive about doing this, because brothers and sisters, you can already see the fluctuation of the entire world coming into the America. And these folks are going to have to be placed somewhere. And if we don't keep the value of our communities, others are going to have it for free. So again, it's time that we become owners of something, land owners, building owners. Get away from renting, especially in your own black communities, because the black communities where you live in, they're still affordable for you to do and grow your communities economically. But that affordability is going to die out because others are going to come in, and when they come in, they're going to come in with money, and they're going to displace you because you don't have money or you're not uniting in your communities as far as becoming each other's asset. And what I mean about it, what do I mean about becoming each other's asset? I mean to when it comes to the businesses, put up a shopping a center in your communities collectively. Yeah, I know you're talking $1 million, $2 million, $3 million. When it comes to an individual like myself, that may be a little tough to do. And if I should do it, I probably would have to go into debt by borrowing most of the money to buy the shop. But if I went in as a community, brothers and sisters, there's nothing a community can't do. We can put the $2 or $3 million together. All we needed to do is have business planning. And then once we put our business plans together, the communities enact their plan. Next thing you know, in 6 months or less than a year or so, there's your a business center. There's your business community and your own communities. Now, the citizens that live in your communities who have to go uptown, downtown, or somebody else's town to buy their goods and services. Now all they have to do is wake up, and the goods and services is right there. The dental office is right there. The doctor's office is right there. The lawyer's office is right there. The real estate broker is right there. You see where I'm going with this? The insurance companies, the banks, the shopping area, everything. Why not have them in your own communities? Again, with the amount of monies that we spend as consumers, that tells you right there how rich our spendings are that's coming from our communities. So use that as your example and say, now, let's go after our own black dollars. And the way we earn our own black dollars is we have to give goods and services to each other. So again, join with us in network marketing, getting to know each other. But the biggest thing is that we need to become business owners. So again, that's my summary Black Belt Wall Street and New Africa Business Association. And you'll be learning much more about both associations as we go along. So again, Brother Aziz, I know it took a moment longer than normal, but I noticed that many of our audience just don't know anything about who we are, so we're going to have to be a little bit more informative about who we are. So, Brother Aziz, I'm going to give you a moment, then I'm saying Sister Aisha, and the rest of them are waiting to come on and start their important message. Brother Aziz. Brother Aziz, are you with us? Okay.
Disaster preparedness. And I hope you all can hear me well.
Yes.
Okay. As you know, as well as I do, that once again, we are being bombarded by another disaster, Hurricane Ian. And we have really been following this greatly, because this is a Category 4 hurricane already. And for the ones of you all who have been in the training, you know that hurricanes and all major storms have consequences. Now, even though Hurricane Ian is a Category 4 hurricane, and it is headed north-northwest, it will still have consequences within 1,000 to 2,000 mile radius. That doesn't mean that just in the north northwest, northeast. It doesn't mean that at all. And we have history that tells us that hurricanes and all storms, disasters have consequences. And back in 2020, if you all remember, Hurricane Isaac, and some pronounce it Isaiah, but Isaac, which was just a Category 1 hurricane. And it was off the coast of New Jersey. That hurricane had consequences all the way into West Africa. West Africa is well over 1,000 miles from mainland U.S. We also have another example of a hurricane having far-reaching consequences. And also in 2020, if you remember, in Nicaragua, we had a major hurricane, Category 4 hurricane, but it created storm environment that we call, at that time, Eta. Eta was on the Florida coast. So, and that's way over 1,000 miles apart. So if you have a natural disaster such as Ian in the Florida Peninsula, we're going to feel the consequences far-reaching into mainland U.S., not just on the coast part of the U.S., the coastal part. This we have to be cognizant of, or and always think, whenever there is a natural disaster, what are the consequences of that disaster as it will affect our lives? We have to constantly remember this is one planet, not a planet divided up in parts. That's only for the map. But the reality is that we live on one planet, and we're going to be impacted by whatever in the environmental sector that occurs in one part of the planet. It will have consequences for all of us. So some of the consequences that we are already seeing as far as our economics, there's going to be extreme financial insecurity. And we're beginning to face that now. We see escalated animal attacks, toxic air pollution. We're experiencing in the U.S. and more so in other parts of the world, food shortages. And our other day, we noticed there was a report on the rising cost of drinkable water. All of these things I'm mentioning are consequences. We have a tremendous loss of breathable air. More people are having to use respirators than in the past. One of the issues that's affecting that we see a lot of politically, economically, and socially is mass migration. That's families moving from one country to another. And in the U.S., we're beginning to see mass migration, families moving from one state to another, causing a tremendous decrease in the number of houses, especially the high cost increase in rental properties. I live in Durham, North Carolina, and we are experiencing tremendous house shortage. People cannot afford to rent property now, can't afford to rent a two-bedroom or a one-bedroom apartment. It's too expensive. It's way outside of their income level. We're also experiencing people who are moving into our area, especially from California. They can afford the houses, the vacant houses, whereas the residents cannot. So this is causing a political and a social issue and an economic issue and tremendous social stress in the community. Of course, we just came through a tremendous disease and pandemic situation, and we are still in it. I understand there's a new variant out there. This is going to be a way of life for us. And a lot of this is caused by climate change and the repercussions of our climate as it's affecting us. There's going to be an increase in conflicts and wars, because there are going to be countries who do not feel that they are receiving their fair share, and there are going to be countries who can take advantage of the situation globally. The increase in water vapor. Now, what that means to us, when the water vapor increases, it causes extreme heat. Extreme heat is one of the major consequences of a disaster on our children. They have less tolerance to extreme heat. They develop tremendous respiratory problems. We have not looked seriously, I feel, as a mother, as a grandmother, and as a neighbor, we have not looked seriously at how climate change is affecting our young children, especially the ones in the age range of 1 through 5. Then, of course, the ones who are older, the teenagers. So we have to be very careful as parents and look at this situation with our young people. We are also experiencing increased violence. Homicides due to higher temperatures, rape, aggravated assault. Scientists are telling us that these crimes can be attributable to higher temperatures. And I was surprised when I read the report. We also experience an increase in climate injustice. A case in point. Africa contributes to less than 3% of global emissions. The Western world contributes to over 95% of global emissions. However, the African continent and other continents as well, but I'm using the African continent as an example, is the continent that is suffering disproportionately from climate injustice, and it is a perpetuation of a long issue that we have been dealing with the disparities between countries. What we have to do as a society, and especially the organization of Black Belt Wall Street and Summit Environmental Resources, we have come together to form a partnership to look at this global issue, to develop a training program to equip all of the U.S., the total community of the U.S., with the requisite skills to survive this new age and to adapt to this new environment that we are coming into. We have formed this partnership, and we would like to invite you all, if you have nonprofit organizations, if you have community-based organizations, join with us. We can do a great deal of work if we come together, if we come together as one unit. The federal government is now releasing funds for disaster preparedness, for disaster mitigation, all different levels dealing with climate change and natural disasters, especially when it comes to the issue of resilience. We are in a position as a community of people, because we have these organizations, we're in a position to take advantage of, not in a negative way, but in a positive way, the resources that we pay into from our tax dollars to bring it back to our community, to train our people in what they're going to have to do to survive this new lifestyle that we're moving into. We have to become consciously aware of climate change. We have to develop a plan on what you're going to do when that storm ends up on your doorstep. We have to have certain supplies and equipment to, if we're going to evacuate or if we're going to shelter in place. And just today, I heard on the news that the emergency authorities are telling the people down in Florida, it's too late. You can't evacuate. You have to stay in place. And as they were saying that and showing the pictures of hundreds, maybe thousands of cars on the road to leave Florida, to leave that part of Florida, I thought about the homeless people. Most, 99% of the homeless people throughout America cannot evacuate. They don't have transportation. They don't have the financial means. They can't buy gas, probably, you know. So no one showed the homeless people on television. Where do they go? These are the questions that we as a people are going to have to answer. And the ones who are the most, who have the consciousness of it, we're responsible for addressing it. So when we go to our local government agencies and we bring them into bring their constituent base or their employees or the people they reach out to into training, we're going to have to ask that question. What about the homeless? When the homeless have to stay there in the storm, do they have the supplies they need to survive? Where do they go? I haven't heard anyone say on any other newscast anything about the homeless. And if any of you all have heard anything, please let me know. But I have not. So I'm going to give you all a chance to ask me some questions and stop me at any time and ask your question. But I want to say, since we have a hurricane out there, the consequences of a hurricane can be a tornado. Tornadoes cause hurricanes. Hurricanes cause tornadoes. The hurricane also can cause tropical storms. Hurricanes cause extreme heat from those tropical storms. Extreme heat causes drought. If the land dries out, what do you think is going to happen next? Earthquakes. Dry land causes earthquakes. Also, droughts can cause wildfires. And so we know this ricochet effect. When you have drought, you have food insecurity. Look at what's taking place over in the Ukraine. They have a civil war going on. However, they're faced with food insecurity because of some of the drought. There's tremendous water shortage in a drought, increased disease. And one of the things that we are noticing now is the insect infestation. That is caused by drought. Locally, in the area that I'm in, the companies that go out and spray for pests are reporting that their business, they have so many calls now, they can't get to their regular customers who practice just regular maintenance with insect infestation in their homes and in their lawns. They can't even get to those regular customers because the increase in insects. And it will increase even more so the more droughts we have because insects will not stay in the ground. They're going to come out seeking water. So these are the things that we really have to be cognizant of. So before I go any further, I would like to hear from some of the listeners. What do you think? Are you prepared for a disaster if it lands on your doorstep tomorrow or next week or next month? How much thought have you given to this issue? So.
Our mics are open. If you can hear us, I've opened all the mics. So if anyone have any questions, any comments, we welcome your comments.
Well, I have a comment, Brother Aziz, Sister Aisha. I'd like to know if it's ever happened before. Like, this hurricane has happened before. This is another thing a lot of people never seen, I don't think, Brother Bilal and I, but we talked about it before, that this hurricane is now has pulled water away from land out into the ocean, and it's not going to release it for a while to come back in. Is that a common occurrence, or is that something that happens a lot?
Well, I don't think, since it happened in a large body of water, and I'm not a science specialist, but yes. Since it has happened in a large body of water, I cannot imagine that this is an unusual situation. I have been in some of the African countries when there has been storms, and the water receded in the ocean, and it took the water at one event, the water receded around 6 o'clock in the evening near sunset, which is normal. And the water was supposed to return the next morning. However, because there was a storm pending and the people were beginning to experience the extreme heat, the water did not return that morning. It did not return until later in the evening. And it rushed back in towards shore. And it quickly, it stayed for about an hour. And normally it would stay 12 hours, and it receded again. And we were told that was the result of extreme heat. It caused extreme heat, and the water just went away. Now, that was a frightening sight for me because I had never seen that. You look out your window of the hotel, and you see this beautiful water, and then you hear this terrible sound of a major storm, and that was the water receding, and then you see the bottom, the floor of the ocean bed where the water was. And then, of course, the people knew better. They were out there picking up the mussels and the clams and the things at the bottom. They were prepared for it. But, however, it did not come back on as it would normally come back. And I was told, like I said, it was the result of the high temperature that was really stifling and caused a great deal of illness amongst the people I was with because we were not used to that high humidity and that extreme heat. So I don't know if I answer your question, and I think my answer is that it all depends on the other environmental factors that's causing that situation. If it is abnormal, then there are environmental factors that's causing it to be abnormal. Okay.
Yes, you definitely answered my question as well as sharing that experience that you had with the what global warming is causing as well as that extreme heat. That had to be shocking to see something like that take place. But yes. Thank you very much, and I think that cleared it up with Brother Bilal and then on that, of how that pressure from the storms can cause stuff like that, that heat. Great.
Yeah. You know, I made a comment a minute ago about the effect of climate change on young people, and I just ran across the article in this report. This was a report called The Impact of Climate Change on Children. And it stated that it's estimated that climate change will increase the mortality rate for children. Mortality rate for children, especially children under 5 years old. It further went on to state that 88% of the existing burden of diseases as a result of climate change is put on children under the age of 5. Isn't that a frightening statement? And we are not looking at our young children closely enough. We don't hear about the effects of climate change on them in the news. I haven't heard it yet, and if you all have heard it, please let me know. But this is a shocking. But President Biden did sign the Homeland Security for Children Act, the Homeland Security for Children Act, into law in June 6, 2022. But we haven't heard much about it. You know, so we have to be mindful. Any other questions? We really want those who are listening to us to go back to your community and think about the organizations in your community, the faith-based organizations, the community organizations, the sororities, the fraternities, all of the organizations. We need to come together. When we go to the federal government, we need to go as a block. We know how to go. We know the process. We know how to proceed. But we need you all with us, as partners with us. Our people in the communities can become trainers in climate change preparedness. And this is what we do. We train people to be trainers of people. FEMA stated that since 2013, preparedness in the United States has only increased by 2%. That's a terrible statistic with all the money that's put out there by Congress. Congress allocates the money to FEMA, then to the other 17 departments in the federal government, and then to the state, municipalities, tribal territories, and so forth. 2% since 2013 is a terrible statistic. But one of the things that we've noticed when we tried to figure out why only 2% when there is so much material information out there on the Internet, we realized that it was the messaging. It was the way the message was presented. We cannot present the message to the public in a format that the public don't get. We know that the public is aware of climate change. If you have a television or any type of media outlet, you know that we're in a state of climate change. Well, we all are aware. Being aware is where we all are, but very few of us are consciously aware. Conscious awareness causes you to act. Take action. But just being aware doesn't cause you to take action. You're just aware and you hope it doesn't hit you. But in the training that we offer at Black Belt Wall Street and Summit Environmental Resources, we talk about becoming, and we show you how to become consciously aware, because we want you to take action to prepare yourself, prepare your family, and help your community become prepared. If you become prepared, it will lessen the impact of climate change on you and your family and your community, and you will be able to bounce back after the disaster. That's called resilience. If you do not prepare, it's highly unlikely you're going to bounce back. You will be in that same situation as a large part of our population who depend on the federal government to come to their rescue. Well, the reality is the federal government cannot come to everybody's rescue. Not that many resources available, and the resources will run out. So we as a community of people and a society of people, we have got to look out for ourselves, for our community, for the people in your family. We've always done that as a people. We need to continue to do it. When Hurricane Katrina came on land, it took 3 days, 72 hours for the federal agencies to get to the people. 3 days. And these were people who were stranded. They had no resources. They couldn't leave town because there were no public transportation. They were stranded. They had no idea where they were going to go
and what they were going to do when they got there. They only had the clothes on their back. So the federal government stepped in and to aid the people, and many other people became migrants. They had to leave their homes. Many ended up in Texas. And having talked to some of the families that I know that was in that wave of migration, of migrants, when they got to Texas, the people in Texas didn't want them there. Even though they were U.S. citizens, they were treated differently, and the people in Texas, in Houston, and other places felt that they were coming there to use their resources that they needed. Many of the families are saying now, we wish we had heeded the warning and been prepared, because you're going to have to take care of yourself. You're going to have to take care of your family. So this is where we want to go, but we need you all to go with us. We'll do the heavy lifting, but we need the numbers. We need to know that you are prepared and that you are willing to help train someone else. We'll train you. You train someone else, a community of people. We will take the message in, our message, to the federal government. Our people need jobs. This is what we have to do to move forward. If we do not prepare ourselves, we're going to be in a very bad situation, because the federal government can't rescue everybody. They can't rescue everybody down there in Florida. That's why you see hundreds of people on the road. But you all have got to take some action, come forth, work with us. Identify your organization. Call Brother Bilal and Brother Aziz, or send them an email and let them know, here's an organization, here are a group of organizations, the contact information for those organizations. Would you reach out to them? Yes, we'll reach out to them, because we want to bring them in the circle. And we want to develop a high constituent base, a large constituent base, so everybody can benefit. So that's where we are. We're not waiting to see whether or not the federal government will come into Durham, North Carolina, when we have a disaster. And you all, wherever you are, you can't wait either. You need to take control. Take control of your lives, the lives of your family. And the interesting thing about it, when you do that, you feel empowered. When you do that and you sit down with your children and you develop your plan, your family plan, of which we have a beautiful template that is totally in compliance with what the federal agencies like FEMA and other agencies say you have to do in order to have a plan of action. When you sit down with your children and let them participate, it takes the fear from them, because they know that the family is ready. Whether it's a husband, wife, whether it's a wife or just a husband or whatever, you've got to make these young people feel confident that they're going to survive. Because now they are hearing about climate change and the devastation of climate change in the schools. The schools have no answer. They are just giving out the information. But these kids are absorbing this information, and it's causing them to be more fearful. The families are going to have to take action and protect their children. And you can do that by using the template of our family plan that we are send to you when you register for the course, the training course. Sit down with them. Give everybody a responsible duty in the plan. It's set up that way. Somebody has to know where the go bag is, the emergency kit is. Somebody has to know what room in the house you can go to where there are no windows. Somebody in the family will have to know these different things and the young people, if they're in school, if they're a, if it's a storm, if you get an alert to evacuate, your sons and your daughters need to know where in the community to meet you if they can't get back to the house. This is what the family plan, it will answer that question for your family. You will sit down and you will figure it out. They have to know the right code to call you if there is a mass shooting taking place at their school. All of these things you're going to have to talk to your children about. And that's why you need to sit down, take 45 minutes to an hour with your family to complete the plan, the family plan. There are going to be items that you're going to have to attach to your family plans. You can work on those. One of the things that's interesting now, if you have to evacuate and you need a temporary shelter, and the federal agencies, they want to know more about where you came from if you're in a different state. They want to know, are you a migrant? Are you a citizen? You can prove that you have a residence someplace other than maybe the state that you migrated to. So have a utility bill with your name on it and an address. Utility bills come that way. Have something with your name on it and your domicile from where you came from. These are things that we talk about in the training. Any questions?
Our mics are open. If you can hear us, we can certainly hear you. We welcome your comments or questions. Okay, we know we got an audience out there. I'm looking at the audience attendance, and we certainly have the attendance of brothers and sisters join in with us. Our mics are open. Here's your chance to comment or ask your questions. Our mics are open. Let me just say this while those of you who are contemplating joining us, any questions that you may have or questions that may arrive later, you can reach us at the New Africa Business Association, Black Belt Wall Street, and just go to nabassc@gmail.com, Washington, D.C., our URL, nabassc@gmail.com, and you can send us whatever questions or whatever email you wish to send us. Or if you wish to go to our web, that would be the New Africa Business Association .com URL. New Africa Business Association. Association is spelled out, is not spelled out. It's New Africa Business ASSOC@URL. .com. So I'm sorry, a New Africa Business Association, ASSOC, .com, URL, or Washington, D.C. And I say URL or Washington, D.C. because around the nation there are many New Africa Business Associations. So, again, New Africa Business Association.com, D.C., our URL, and our email, nab@gmail.com, nab@gmail.com, New Africa Business Association, Washington, at gmail.com. and you'll be able to send us, or you can call us, 202-288-5660, 202-903-7278. And again, you can ask for myself, Bilal Bynum, or Aziz Shaheed. And so again, our mics are open. Any comments or questions that you may have from the comments that you've heard tonight, whether it's about Black Belt Wall Street, whether it's about the natural disasters, or we welcome your comments.
I want to also mention, if you receive the flyer from Black Belt Wall Street announcing the schedule for the training, there is a training scheduled for tomorrow. However, that training is not available. It has reached its capacity. And so you cannot register for that training for tomorrow evening at 7 to 8 p.m. That is the last training for the month of September, and you will not be able to register for that. However, we will soon put together the schedule for October, November, and part of December, and well, all of December that we will be offering the training. And that will be sent out from Black Belt Wall Street to its constituent base very shortly, probably within the next week. So you cannot register for the class on the 29th, which is Thursday, because we have reached our capacity for that class. Okay.
Again, our mics are open. We welcome your comments. Our mics are open. All right. Well, you know, Sister Aisha, I was just hearing your comments, and I was thinking about what I've been hearing and seeing on the TV today and what most of us have been hearing and seeing. And, you know, we start talking about FEMA don't look, the federal government of FEMA don't look at states. They look at regions. And I was thinking about how many regions just today that was shown to us the devastation of this storm, and how many and how much catastrophical damages it was causing, and again, how many regions. And when you were saying that the federal government only have 2%, or it only increased its reporting these disasters by 2% overall, nationally, and we look at the devastation of what's going on right now, as a matter of fact, and all the regions, we say regions, all the states that this disaster is going to cover.
Yeah.
And with only 2% trained reporters, do you realize how long it's going to take? And I know we don't get into recovery because we're still into the disaster, but the storm is going to be over with, and the disaster would have already occurred. And those who are in bad, bad, terrible need, especially in the rural areas, and of course, if there was only 2% of trained reporters, and we know throughout the history, all of these trained reporters that the government have throughout the country, very few of them are African Americans. So again, when you said the poor being left out of any kind of help of getting them out of town or any kind of help whatsoever, what kind of help do you think the poor is going to be getting after this disaster is over with and the catastrophic damages have occurred? What, who is going to do the reporting in our communities, regardless if you're poor or not, because there are not that many reporting bodies, and the reporting bodies that are qualified to do the reports, you think they're going to be making reports for you when they got so much to report in their own areas that they're trained in?
So, yeah.
This is what Sister Aisha, we can't thank you enough because, I mean, you have your experiences not only right here in the United States, but you all over the world, and especially in Africa. For so many years, you've been dealing with natural disasters. And here it is, you have chosen to come home and bring in your qualifications as to where you're trying to get your message of expertise to those who are who wouldn't be privileged to this type of training. So again, brothers and sisters, this is not an opportunity. This is the calls as to where you can do something now for your community that is just not being done. So again, you're going to miss the training, and if you already missed several training sessions that I myself have been involved, so I know you missed those, and now our training classes are filling up, and we don't know who they're filling up to because you're not the only one hearing our messages. But those who are smart enough to get in first, and they ain't going to look at see what color your skin is, they're going to get in there and they're going to get this information, and they're going to be very proactive with it because, again, with this type of training and with so many trainees needed by FEMA and by the federal government, boy, think of the businesses, think of the things that those who are trained will be able to do with this training. Now, we're saying that those that we're training to stay with us, to stay joined with us, because, again, we're going to be going to the federal government. But even when we go to the federal government and we start talking about covering, let's say, our region here in this region, a Region 3, which is going to be running from Pennsylvania, Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, Virginia, and West Virginia. Think of the millions right in this region that we will be representing right here in our own region. So again, this is a training and an opportunity that's going to be ongoing because these are hurricanes. When hurricane season comes, this is going to be a continuation. In the wintertime, when we have our nor'easters and you have all types of bad storms, even in the wintertime, again, these are the disasters that will be ongoing. So reporters are in great, badly needed, and here it is, we're training and we have our own expert to train us. So it's an opportunity before this sister came along, and nobody, what do we know about FEMA? I mean, I knew a little something about Homeland Security, a very little, but when it came to FEMA, I heard about them. I saw what happened with Katrina. But here it is, where you can be a person in your communities, where you can actually be the person that can help your communities, communities who may not never get any help, and ever, like I said, we don't get into the recovery because we don't want to spend too much communications on recovery when there's so much to be done on the disaster itself, but the recovery is going to come. And so, Sister Aisha, I just hope you just don't become discouraged. Keep working because what happened?
No, I'm Brother Bilal. I'm not going to become discouraged, because I am blessed to have the opportunity to go back to the way I was raised. And when I got to the stage in my professional career where I could decide what I was what I wanted to do and how I wanted to get it done, I was so thankful, and I saw it as a blessing. And I said, the one thing that I have always said I was going to do, and that was to go back to my hometown and work with the people. Well, my hometown, it just so happened with this climate change, my hometown is all over the world. My hometown happens to be all over the United States of America, and that is where I want to devote my knowledge, skills, and ability, and all my talent to working in America to help with this climate change. And I grew up, and I have said this before, I grew up in Western North Carolina. In Western North Carolina, folks, we had, at that time, four seasons, spring, summer, fall, and the storm, which was called winter. Winter was our storm. We had a storm every year, a major blizzard, major snow storms, major freezes. I grew up during the time of segregation, and there was no, the water, our water in the house would freeze for 3 months in the winter. So that meant that we had to store water the way we had to store food, because we had no fire hydrants where the city could come down and open the fire hydrants for the people to get water. So we knew all of the things we had to do to survive. So in the spring, which was a short season, we would look backwards at everything that occurred during the storm, during the winter. We had to start our assessment of what fell apart, what we didn't do well enough. Also, the men in the neighborhood. Now, this was an entire neighborhood. Three neighborhoods would come together. So the men had to go out and look. They knew pretty much the casualties, but they had to go find the bodies. And many of the bodies were the seniors who did not want to do certain things to their houses or whatnot. So they had to find these people. The men were the first ones. Every spring, there was a group of men. They would start going around to all of the houses, counting the number of people who are still in the houses, asking the question, are you all right? Anybody hurt in the house? Or anybody missing? So we had that group of men. We also had a group of women who, in the spring, now remember, this is an assessment period, the spring, very short period of time. They, too, will go around to the houses and write down on a piece of paper what Miss Annie needed, what happened to her house, her roof is gone, and this. Then in the summer, we had to can, cook, grow crops, so we would have something to put in the jars and to dry out, because remember, we were preparing for the storm. So the summer was a long period of time. Then came the fall. In the fall, we looked all the way back to the summer and to the spring to see what we missed, because we knew that within a month and a half, our falls were very short. Within a month and a half, the storm was going to come. We had to be prepared. This was my life and many others, the lives of many other people, the life of many other people during that period of time. And so preparedness, we live to prepare for the storm. Every year we prepared. That was our lifestyle. I say that to say, folks, if you do not, the state fair in Dallas,
when is it?
I don't know.
You can share that.
I think we have someone need to mute their phone. Hello?
Yeah.
So if we don't take this climate change serious, some of us are not going to make it. It's not going to get better. Every year is going to get worse and worse. The scientists are telling us it's going to get worse and worse. And within, out there, already doing destruction, this is just the beginning of a situation that many of us are not going to make it through. So I was looking at Brother Bilal. I was looking at the regions in the U.S. when you brought it up. Do you know that this Hurricane Ian has the potential of affecting 23 states, region 1, 2, 3, and 4? That's 23 states. That's almost half of the U.S. And those are the states itself for, those are the regions itself for one other region where hurricane is the primary hazard. It's the primary hazard in region 1, region 2, region 3, and region 4. And also, of course, in region 6. But that's like Texas, Oklahoma. So when we hear of a hurricane, region 1, for the ones of you who do not know, and this is something that we discussed in the class, and we are sending you the map of the region so you will know what state what region your state is in, because the federal government releases information now based on regions. And if you don't know your region, it's going to bypass you. Region 1. Maine, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, Vermont. Your primary hazard is hurricane and earthquake. The region 2, New York, New Jersey, Puerto Rico, U.S. Virgin Islands. Your primary hazard, hurricane, floods, wildfires, drought, and tornadoes. Region 3. Delaware, Maryland, Pennsylvania, Virginia, Washington, D.C., and West Virginia. Your primary hazards are hurricanes and floods, extreme heat, earthquake, and power outage. Region 4, Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, Mississippi, the Carolinas, and Tennessee. Your primary hazards are tornadoes, hurricane, and severe storms. Those are the first four regions in the U.S. Hurricane Ian is traveling north, northeast. Doesn't it make sense? that it could affect region 1, 2, and 3? Doesn't it make sense? Because it's down here in region 4, the southeast region. But if it's traveling north, northeast, it could potentially affect these other regions. So I say to the audience, there's so much that you're going to have to learn, that we're all having to learn. Every day there is something new. But you need to know what region of the country you live in. So when the reports come out, when the funding comes out through Department of Homeland Security, you'll know that the mitigation officer for your state, you need to know their name, their information, how to get in touch with them, and we'll send you that information. Because those are the people that you need to go to and say, what about my community? If you don't go to them, they're going to be so bombarded, they're not going to come to you. So you have got to come together. And I want to say this about that September the 29th training. And I said that you cannot register for that class, which is tomorrow, because we can't accommodate anymore. I want to tell you that the people in that class, they don't look like me. They do not look like most of you all. I'm an African-American female. They do not look like me. They heard about the training. They got the word on the training. And their organization, corporation, is pulling all of their people together. Because their corporation said, we want you all trained for disaster preparedness, and we're going to help you. So the corporation stepped in and said, we'll take care of all our people. We'll take that entire date, September the 29th, and they are going to take 2 complete dates in October to finish out the rest of their administrative staff. And they have also said, if we have time and more time in November, they would like to take 2 more dates. And then they will have everybody at their top level administration in their corporation throughout the country trained. So I didn't go to them. They came to us. And we're not going to tell anybody, no, we're not going to do it, because we want to train everybody, because storms don't care what color your skin is or where you live, how much money you have, and how many degrees you have. It does not care. It will attack all of us equally. So I just want to let you know, let's get it together. Talk to your religious organization, your institutions, your faith-based institutions. Ask the pastor. We need to train our people. Can we pull our people together to get them trained? Our people need to know more about climate change and the risk to the families, the risk to these children. And what are we going to do about the homeless? They're going to be left in these cities when other people are evacuated, and they're going to have to, for the most part, fend for themselves. Fend for themselves. They can't even fend for themselves when the weather is fine. How will they fend for themselves during a disaster? And I'm constantly asking these local governments, what are you doing for the homeless? And most of them are saying to me, well, we don't have a plan in place yet. We are thinking about it. We are trying to get somebody on board to come up with a plan. What do you suggest? If you have a plan, let us know. We can sit down. Well, I don't have time to sit down with them. I have time to be on this radio show every Wednesday night. And when these groups say, okay, can we take your date for September the 29th, I'm going to say yes, because my people have not come on board and signed up for the class. And we've got to train folks. So I say that. Let us give you the information.
Let us tell you the region of the country you live in. Let us tell you who is your hazard mitigation officer and their telephone number and their address in your state, okay? That's when we'll get back to state. Let us tell you that. So you will know who to contact. You will tell your organization, your sororities and fraternities, we need to be contacting these people. Any questions?
Again, brothers, our mics are open. If you can hear us, we can hear you. We welcome your comments or questions.
I'd like to make a comment.
And after you make your comment, Brother Aziz, tell everybody how they can get in touch with us in case they have questions later on. Go right ahead, Brother Aziz.
Yes. The comment I'd like to make is, again, I want to thank Sister Aisha for the information that she's sharing with us, because the information she is sharing is information that we need to know about something that's going to happen to us in the future if we're going to live. And a lot of people don't know about things that's going to happen to them in the future and how to be prepared for it. You may hear about some things going on, but the information of how to be prepared for it, whether it's a disaster, whether it's being prepared for employment, or being prepared for something that you're going to need to survive on, most of the people are here, you need to be prepared, but they don't have the information available to them. And what I wanted to let our listeners know, that this information that Sister Aisha is offering in the company summit, they are giving us information that is a matter of life or death. Strictly straight up. Information that's a matter of life and death. And we don't want history to repeat itself as we saw it repeated, what happened to Katrina and that. And, you know, and families and everyone got all separated, and they wasn't in the poor, the homeless. Many of them perished. They died. So I just want our listeners to know is we at New Africa Business Association, Black Belt Wall Street, we are thankful that we have a sister that is qualified like this to come on our show and be willing to provide this information for our people. So any of our listeners out there, we want you to know, if you're listening to us, it is your duty and responsibility to you and your family, as well as to share with your community, this information that we have. It's very similar to the information that Noah tried to tell the people about the flood coming, and they didn't want to listen, and they drowned. The same thing we're talking about, these storms that's coming and not being prepared for them, no matter what type it is, heat, rain, snow, flood, wind, there is a way to be prepared for them. And this is what Sister Aisha is offering to us. And thank you again for letting me share that information with our listeners.
And
I'm
going to
tell
the people. Right, Sister Aisha.
I want to tell the people, when I mention state hazard mitigation officers, how important they are for you to know who they are. And I'll give you an example. For the District of Columbia, for D.C., that person's name is Vermicia Alpha. The address for that office is D.C. Homeland Security and Emergency Management Agency, 2720 Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue, Southeast. I guess people in D.C., you all know where that is, right?
Oh, yes.
That phone. That phone number is 202-313-8765. This is public information that I'm reading. And you need to know, we need to know, every one of us in the U.S., we need to know the name, the telephone number, and the address of our state hazard mitigation officer. So they're the people.
that we will ask the questions of, and we will tell them, you need to come into our community. But if we are not contacting them, they might not know, or they might not be conscious enough to come into our community and help us. And so we have to bring them. Yes.
Like I was saying, when have they ever came into our community? So anticipating these, the government and the few reporting representatives that they do have, how can they, I mean, I can't even imagine coming into our communities when there is such a shortage of these reports getting to any communities, but I just can't imagine them. So this business of even thinking that if this ain't something that we do for ourselves, that it's going to be done, it's wishful thinking. I'll just put it that way.
Exactly. Yep.
Assalamualaikum.
Well,
I just
asked.
I think you have some questions.
I've been listening and I'm trying to ask a, excuse me, Sister, thank you so much for the information. How long is the class? And my second question is, can a class be held on a Friday afternoon? I'm asking because as a Muslim, and we have our prayer services from 1 to say 2 on Friday, is it possible for someone to come after that to hold a class while we have the greatest number of our people attending our services?
Well, anything is possible. We can certainly schedule it. We are flexible with the time. And if you see that schedule from Black Belt Wall Street, you will see that we have different times of the day. Well, not so much for August and September. Most of it was 7 p.m. to 8. And we were really trying to throw out some different times of days and days of the week to see what is the best time for the public. So, yes, anything is flexible. We can talk about it and we can work it out, Sister, because this is too important that we will not allow a time of day or a day of the week stop us from getting the training. So, yes, it's imperative. And it's flexible. We'll work it out.
And especially if your community have the numbers that would fill up one of our classes. If you have those kind of numbers, yes, I agree, flexibility is in order.
Well, I do know that we will, at some point, we will be trying to worship elsewhere as our building gets expanded. And so
yeah.
I don't know what that timing will be, but it just occurred to me that perhaps that might be an opportunity to get a group of people together or set up something, at another location that people can come.
Well,
but I wanted to get a sense of how long the class lasts. Is it an
it's
hour
40,
class? You have to take several of them?
The introductory class is 1 hour. Then after that hour, you're going to have the tools. You're going to have the tools for preparedness. But we want people to come back and say, yes, I want to be a trainer of people. I want to be a trainer. And then we'll go to a higher level class. But this is a class that everyone, a basic class on preparedness, and we will take you through every aspect and give you the tools to be prepared. And that's for every family. And it's only an hour. Now, you'll have some homework that you're going to have to do outside the class, and that's your plan. But we're going to give you the template of the plan, and we're going to go through the plan with you. But you have to fill that out away from the class. But you can do that because you'll have full instructions and it's easy to do. So that's what it is. It's an hour. Now, we will do, this is primarily Zoom, not in person.
Okay.
And
so
see, that's
June,
why we need.
I'm a member of the health team, Mahomet. So I will try. I will try to talk to the leaders of the health team and see if we can try to organize something. And get back because it seems like invaluable information.
Everyone who registers for the class, of course, they will get the link for the Zoom session. And we will work out that time of day for the session with the convenience. We, right now, we can accommodate 100 people on one Zoom session. And these corporations, they have way more than that. But they are not my primary focus. And so if the community of people that I'm a part of began to come in and say, we want the training, they have to get in line. These corporations have to get in line. They have the money to pay for it. It's $45 per person, and it's easy for them. That's easy for them. But that's not our top priority right now. Now, once more people are trainers, let us train you to be a trainer, then you will conduct these Zoom sessions, or you will go to your neighborhood center where there could be a number of people, and the fee for the session, hopefully, that could be a grant from some of these faith-based groups to train their people.
Okay.
And you can do it in person.
Mm.
Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
But everything can be worked out, and we are flexible.
Okay.
So come on board with us, okay? So to be a trainer. You identify people in your group who want to be trainers for all over the country.
Oh, okay. Well, I would definitely ask them. Yes, sir.
Aisha, I just recognized who we were talking to. We were talking to Sister Neil.
Yes,
we were talking to my dear Sister Neil. Sister Neil is on the Imam Talib Sharif directory board. She's a member of his directory team. So it hasn't been announced yet, but we know what we're going to do as far as the Imam's position that he have with Homeland Security, and she is one of his directors. So we're looking forward to working with Sister Neil and anything she puts together from.
And I also have contacts with a group called Muslim Health Consortium, which are health professionals of Muslims that are all over the country. So it might be something that I can get that group to also get involved in, and then you'll be able to. I don't know whether you're just doing teaching here in the D.C. area. Members of Muslim Health Consortium live in different places in the country. And they may be interested in having the same type of training.
Well, actually, you know, since it is Zoom, sister, you can be we can have people from every state, different state on the Zoom. It doesn't matter what state you're from or that you're in. That's the benefit of having the Zoom training.
Yes, ma'am.
So, no. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And we would like
locally first, and then I'll get back with you, and I can get your information from Brother Bilal, and get back with you and let you know how we can get
very
things
good
going. Yes, ma'am. Yes, thank
get
you.
My information from Brother Bilal, and let's talk direct. All right.
Okay.
Give me a call.
Sister Aisha and Sister Neil.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Right now, in exchange. Information. I have no objections on it having to come through me. No, it's too important.
Give me your email address.
Communicate without necessarily having to come through me.
Okay. Okay. Well, I will. Did the sister want my email? Did she just say? I think she said email
give me
or
your email.
Okay.
Yeah. Email.
Well, that Brother Bilal should have it. I didn't want to necessarily put it on the radio.
I can send it to her.
Okay.
All
good.
Right.
Yes. Okay. That would be perfect. Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Then we can be in communication. Thank you, sister. Okay.
Thank you.
We got about 3 minutes left. If you have any questions or comments, you got about 3 minutes to ask your questions or comments. Our mics are open. We welcome your comments.
Good afternoon, Brother Bilal. This is Eartha Stone. Awesome presentation, Sister Aisha, as always.
Yes, assalamu alaikum.
I want to thank you all for sharing your love during the time of laying our mother to rest. Beautiful plant from New Africa Business Association. My family and I were speechless. Thank you guys so very much. And I know we're running out of time, but I wanted to tell you much love from our family. Thank you again for sharing your love.
Thank you for your service, sister. Thank you for your service. And brothers and sisters, as you can see, we're networking right now. The sister that we just talked about, that was one of our directors out of Texas. Of course, Sister Aisha out of North Carolina. We have directors out of Oklahoma. We have directors out of Florida, Delaware, Maryland. So, again, as you can see, through network marketing, we have stretched quite a ways through our networking and getting to know each other and identifying our businesses and our services and our political point of views. So, again, this is the end of tonight's session. We'll be back again next Wednesday and every Wednesday. And until then, we are saying thanks so much. And this is the New Africa Business Association, and we're saying thanks so much. And until then, good evening.
You just thank the Lord.